Mini-episode 701 of the FDH Lounge is brought to you by Sportsology, delivering unconventional columns and webcasts about sports, TV, music, movies, and more. Follow them on the web at Sportsology.com.
The FDH Lounge. You want to schedule your life around it.
A long time ago, on a gloomy, wet Cleveland spring night, two men stand alone amidst the late-night drizzle. Their voices echo across the vacant station parking lot as they debate the merits of the great American radio show that have been missing for far too long. On that night, an idea was born. That idea became the FDH Lounge. Welcome to the FDH Lounge.
Welcome, everyone, to mini episode 701 of the FDH Lounge. This is FDH Managing Partner Rick Morris. We have a very fun conversation coming your way today, as we have done sometimes in the past following awards shows and usually following the Oscars. We're getting together with our good friend, fitness and pop culture expert John Bastow, to discuss the 2016 Oscars, again, from largely a pop culture perspective, looking back on the weekend, breaking it down, some of the winners, losers, oddities, what have you. There's really nobody better to do this with, as you've been able to tell from the past times we've done this, than with John Bastow. If you're having a conversation with him about this, it is guaranteed to be rollicking. So with that having been said, we're happy to get him on the program here. Welcome back to the show, our good friend, John Bastow. John, welcome back to the FDH Lounge, buddy. I've been looking forward to this one. I'm looking forward to breaking down the Oscars with you.
Oh, Lord. No matter what type of day I'm having, it always gets better after hearing one of your intros. God, what a lot to live up to, but I love being on this show.
Well, it's a lot of fun having you on, my man. It always is, and truly, I look forward to it when there's a lot that's going on, as was the case the last couple of days with the Oscars, with everything surrounding that. And I have to say that we sometimes look for different oddities to happen on the red carpet, and sometimes there will be the chance of a wardrobe malfunction. Of course, the biggest wardrobe malfunction of the weekend came at another iconic event. I know you were very much wrapped up in what was happening at the Oscars. Did you happen to hear about what happened at the NFL Combine to that unfortunate young man?
Which one was this? No, I think I was too wrapped up with that and some other stuff that's going on.
It made me think of the Oscars when it happened. I just sort of drew the comparison in my head when people started talking wardrobe malfunction. A young pro prospect by the name of Chris Jones was running his 40-yard dash on the surface in Indianapolis at Lucas Oil Stadium, a wonderful stadium, by the way. I've been there. It's a great place. I don't think he'll remember it so fondly. As he's running his 40-yard dash on national television, for anybody watching on the NFL Network, right in the middle of it, he flops down onto the ground, and it becomes clear that it was to camouflage the fact that somehow or another, as he's running, his junk popped out.
There you go. That's
yeah,
all kinds of
yeah.
Stuff.
I mean, that's something that you go back to Janet Jackson at the Super Bowl for something like that. We never have anything that awful happen on the red carpet there. And I don't know that us red blooded males would think that it's awful if it happened to one of the starlets, but I started thinking, what are the odds that happens the same weekend as the Oscars? You know, you start hearing the phrase wardrobe malfunction, and it has to do with a sports activity.
That is unbelievable, because football players are so covered up with so many layers of how that could even happen. I mean, I could understand wardrobe malfunction happening with Janet Jackson and ladies that are in skimpy attire. I mean, at the Oscars alone, I was a little nervous for Charlize Theron and Olivia Wilde, because they had the dresses down to the belly button. But how can your junk pop out of, wow, yeah. That takes some skill.
I don't know.
That takes
I don't
some
know.
Skill.
And supposedly, I guess it's not safe for work in terms of that video if you go frame by frame. And believe me, I didn't want to. I was like, okay, I'm sure it happened somewhere in that blur of things here that I don't wish to go back and, relive Zapruder film style. But, that was one disturbing mental image. But from there, we go to the red carpet. Then you mentioned some of the starlets there that were in danger of possibly, if the double-sided tape went awry, having something go poorly. And it was interesting. I don't know that there was much danger of that happening, although it's hard to tell what to make of this. Certainly one of the more, I think, divisive outfits of the evening in terms of how it was received. It was an interesting one, the way that it was cut and shaped and worn by Rooney Mara. What were your takes on that white ensemble, we'll call it, for lack of a better term?
Well, that's a good choice. Well, first of all, I mean, Rooney's getting known as like a complete fashion icon, and she also pushes the envelope more to the avant-garde fashion. I mean, a lot of people, you know, were mentioning something. You know, it looks like a bunch of tissues exploded. I think she wears it well, and I mean on Fashion Police, I saw somebody commenting, like I think it was Melissa Rivers making a comment to the effect of, "Now we know we're not going to get a smile. We know we're not going to get a smile, but can we at least?" But that's her persona. I mean, I think she comes. I think she plays that up really well. The pale face, the frozen expression, the very, very avant-garde, but always talked about fashion. And I think that that's why she does it, because that's what gets her talked about and cuts through the clutter, because it's a lot of beautiful ladies there that, you know, have gone through a lot of money and, and a lot of time more often to look as, you know, media-friendly or as media-interesting as they possibly can for the Oscars. And so many of them, I mean, even like Olivia Wilde, I think, is an absolutely stunningly beautiful woman. Didn't get mentioned at all on most of the shows that I saw after the fact, and I thought she was amazing, but it's just that she did not fit, I think, into a lot of the categories, you know, of being eccentric enough or, you know, shocking enough that these other girls, you know, go for. And Rooney Mara has it locked in for that avant-garde, high-end, esoteric fashion that a lot of people don't get, but is always going to get talked about.
Yeah, she knows what she's doing, and it's basically sort of performance art for her every time she goes out there and does that. And that's one of the oddities that you can always kind of expect on the red carpet is what's she going to do for that? We're right along the lines of, one of the modern kind of oddities that materializes every time seemingly for one of the Oscars is who is Aaron Rodgers going to photobomb. So I saw a decent amount of talk about that. I guess he managed to make his way into a couple of shots on the red carpet there. And speaking of football, everything I saw indicated that Lady Gaga's ensemble at the Super Bowl seemed to be much more universally approved of than what she was rocking on the Oscars red carpet. What were your thoughts about that? Obviously, you're going to go more conservative at the Super Bowl, and she's going to let her freak flag fly at the Oscars a little bit. But what were your thoughts on the way she was there versus a couple weeks back?
Okay, well, first of all, it's so funny how we are always on the same wavelength. I was like, I've got to mention something about Lady Gaga. Three things. Number one, Lady Gaga was always a fashion icon, but she has left the crazy at home and is coming correct to these, events like the Oscars, the Grammys, etc. I mean, she used to arrive as like walking performance art or in an egg or something shocking and bizarre. Now, I mean, at the Oscars, first of all, it was Gaga-ized, I mean, her outfit, but she was still movie star glam. It was movie star glam. Her whole portrayal of the Countess in American Horror Story was all movie star glam. That is her. She has gone completely from, you know, bizarre, looking like she rolled herself in glue and then rolled around in a children's toy box and then showed up on the red carpet, to being completely iconic Marilyn Monroe style, going back to old Hollywood glamour. As far as the Super Bowl, I mean, I think she really nailed it. I mean, a lot of people joked around that, Lady Gaga, Effie Trinket called. She wants her outfit back because it looked a little Effie Trinket-esque from The Hunger Games. But I mean, she was perfect for the Super Bowl. She wore a very, very, media-friendly, eye-catching, interesting thing that was going to be talked about, but it was also had that new touch of the Lady Gaga 2.0 of being old Hollywood and more cutting-edge but not bizarre fashion. And, I mean, I think she's also looked awesome at all of the award shows that she's done this whole season, especially, I mean, that one viral video where she bumps into Leo DiCaprio. Was that at the Golden Globes, I think? Golden Globes or the SAG Awards?
So.
He makes that bizarre face, like that shocked face, almost like Chrissy Teigen had when Stacey Dash came up to speak at the Oscars. But I think she's rocking it, and I think she's making – we talked about this before, remember. I think she's making that transition to actress extremely, extremely well in a business that is extremely divided about who they want to accept as an actress and who they want to accept as a singer. And I think her making that transition and doing so well on American Horror Story and then also coming out and saying, well, hey, I studied first to be an actress. It just so happens my singing took off, you know, in a bigger way, so I went with that. To all the people that are, you know, in the old boys club and in the people that's, you know, are diehard actors saying that, you know, we don't want to see a singer winning these awards, you know, for acting. And I think she's making a transition that a lot of other people could not make. And she's doing it 180 degrees different from what she did as Lady Gaga, but with that type of determination and that type of drive. I mean, the reports of on American Horror Story of her having to, she would be on set before everyone else reportedly. She'd be on set after everyone else. She'd always be having acting classes to try to make her scenes better and better. She took that so seriously and did not trade just on her name of, you know, carrying the series as Lady Gaga, and then she was going to act. Whatever she did was going to be fine because she was Lady Gaga. She went in there really trying to hone her craft and make a name for herself as an actress, and I respect that.
That is right. No question about it. And, again, we're not seeing things like the meat dress from her anymore. And
there you go.
Is it cause and effect with her de-emphasizing some of the hallucinogens? I would say yes. But regardless, yeah, she's continuing to reinvent herself and successfully, as you were saying. Now, you mentioned about Rooney Mara and this mm-hmm. notion of someone talking about an explosion of tissues. Mm-hmm. Such was the case that there was a lot of commentary about that and the word feathers as regards Kate Blanchett. And, of course, she is always somebody who is going to go in an interesting direction for these types of events. Now, personally, I am somebody who kind of tends to go thumbs up on these things unless I have a reason to go thumbs down. So I'm looking at it. I'm going, yeah, if you get up close, particularly if you get up close, it looks a little bit weirder and whatever. But most people weren't seeing her really up close. It seemed to set off, as a lot of people said, I mean, that color dress, I'd say very flattering for her skin tone. So you got that as well. And also, too, let's not leave aside the fact that as you're getting to a certain age, anything that is really that flattering to you, I would think, is a good thing. And that dress, I thought, as a man, was very flattering to her. So what are your thoughts on the reactions that she was getting, which seemed to be kind of disparate to me?
Well, anytime you get polarizing reactions is a good thing, because one of the biggest ways to get publicity is to create controversy. First of all, when I made my notes about her address, because I've had to respond about it a few times now, before I read any comments. And the first thing I wrote was, she's wearing aquamarine. I mean, I don't know all the different facets of different colors. I'll just usually say blue. But I know the blues because blue is one of my favorite colors. She's wearing like an aquamarine or turquoisey type gown, and I thought she looked like a beautiful ice princess. She was amazing, and she was class personified walking down the red carpet. And any negative, I couldn't imagine, but there's always going to be negative, and you hope there's negative because that keeps you in the news longer. But I couldn't imagine anything negative to say about it. And she was another one who, like on East Fashion Police, got a lot of praise from like Tim Gunn and Melissa Rivers, but then got panned by others. So, but my opinion is, I thought she was regal. I thought she looked like a beautiful ice princess, like she walked right out of Frozen. As the, I didn't even see Frozen, but if there was a queen or you know mother or duchess or countess of the princess, that's what she reminded me of.
I agree with you. And again, I really like the color blue, and I really, really, really like aqua a lot. One of the reviews that I was reading emphasized that, again, with her porcelain skin, it really kind of sets it off really well. And again, I thought that's what made it as flattering to her as it was, as well as the way that it emphasized her, I think, form would be the tasteful term. And I can't imagine that anybody would have anything negative to say about that. But it's interesting. You almost start to wonder, too, in terms of the fashion police types here. You know, controversy creates cash. You know, we can't have unanimity of opinion on somebody looking great. So you wonder to whatever extent if it might not be a little bit of that. Now, somebody in terms of being the fashion, and not exactly a police here, but mavens, if you will, and it seemed to be, I thought, kind of reaching a little bit as far as finding a theme for the night. The Australian newspaper proclaimed cleavage as the theme of the night, so I want to start there. Yep. I didn't think that there was any overarching theme that bound a lot of what we're talking about here. Did you?
Well, I mean, as I said, as I alluded to before, I mean, Olivia Wilde, Charlize Theron, I mean, they could almost have a gynecological exam without having to remove their dresses. I mean, they were so low cut. But they were great. I mean, as a guy, I thought they both looked stunning. I mean, personally, I mean, I think they're both very, very beautiful women. And but it was a low cut belly show, and there were they also had amazing bodies, which was something that they were showing off, which, you know, the fitness part of me always respects. But I don't think it was overly, I mean, even Cate Blanchett, I mean, her aquamarine gown, I mean, it was low cut. You know, it certainly wasn't anything, it was very classy, but it was still, you know, pushing the envelope. And I think that that was definitely a theme. I would agree with that Australian paper. I mean, if you look at one of the ones that got, I guess, more universally panned, like Heidi Klum, I mean, she, you know, I mean, sticking in the tissue theme, looked like, you know, strategically placed tissues that, you know, show, like, barely covered up a breast, showed part of a belly, then covered up the other breast, and then completely covered up the body. So in that case, I mean, she was showing shoulder, a little bit of undercarriage, and then belly, if a dress can do that. So yeah, it was a theme that was carried out really, really well by some, and then, as always, some missed the mark.
Okay, maybe that was just me being Nelson Nitpicker a little bit on not seeing a unified theme, but you're making kind of a pretty good case for it, actually. You're kind of persuading me a little bit there, but the one in particular that the Australian newspaper was talking a lot about was Ms. Ashley Graham, who, of course, is getting her notoriety at the moment here for being the first plus-sized model on the cover of Sports Illustrated, and that that thing that she was wearing the other night there, I saw a tweet that I knew I had to quote to you. Somebody said that she looked like a stuffed blood sausage. And I'm looking at these still shots of the front of her with her.
Yeah.
There's no tasteful way to say ginormous rack, so I'll just say that. It's cut in various places, hither and there. And I'm looking at it, and I'm thinking to myself, that reminds me of nothing so much as perhaps a weird new kind of superhero logo, and just looking at the mixture of flesh and fabric that was there on her chest. But that was definitely one of the showstoppers of the evening. So I know you got to have some comments on that.
Well, she's a lovely girl. That it just looked like she was wearing the squint-eyed emoji. It was just, an embarrassed red-faced squint-eyed emoji. But I mean, that's just, and it's nothing about her body. I mean, it's great to, as long as you're not in a medical danger zone. If you're plus size and you're rocking it, I am 100% behind you. That style of dress, I don't know anybody that could have pulled off, in my opinion. I just think, I mean, I'm looking at, there was another one, I think, another lady. What the heck was her name again? Another lady who had worn that a dress similar, less detailed, but similar. I think her name was Haley Clawson. And she looked awesome, I thought. I mean, you know, with the same type of dress, but not as much detail. I think that if Ashley didn't have the squint eyes in the emoji, and even if that was more like a bra type of thing, you know, I just kept, when she was walking, I'm like, oh, it's a human version of a squint-eyed emoji. Look at it. There it goes. It's the big two eyes. They're squinting, and it's embarrassed because it's red. You shouldn't look like, I always think, like, when you're wearing an outfit, whether you're a guy or a girl, you shouldn't look like something else that somebody recognizes. Like, it shouldn't be like, there you are, it's the sausage. Or there you are, you know, it looks just like Garfield the cat. And which hers also did. It looked like Garfield was sort of squinting because she also had the points coming up so they could be his ears. But, you know, I just don't ever think with fashion, if you want to be avant-garde, if you want to be different like Rooney Mara, but so you're not exactly looking like something else that somebody can anchor it to, if you know what I mean.
Yes, and like Garfield the cat, I think she likes her lasagna. But I would say just in terms of, you know, attention getting, I think right there we're looking at our winner of the 2016 Oscars red carpet. If you can be described by one person as some kind of emoji, some other person is looking like a new weird kind of superhero logo, I think you won the night. Did you not, John?
Holla, the new queen is crowned. But what we said before, I think, is the key. I'd almost rather be polarizing in dress or personality or whatever than be universally liked. Because as we've talked about many times on this show, the media loves to hail you and the media loves to nail you. So if you're ever universally liked at one thing, they're going to want to hate you like crazy at the next thing. Whereas if you're polarizing, you're always interesting, and there's always going to be those that are turning around to like you and that you're winning over, and then the ones that are not liking you so much are going to be more quiet because they don't really ever want to say, oh, I love them at first, but now I hate them. You know, so I'd rather be polarizing from the start and have that little bit of a, you know, controversy leading to the media acknowledgement, and those people I've noticed tend to stay in the media longer and have a longer shelf life.
Absolutely. And polarizing, that always provides you the ultimate out. If somebody doesn't like it, somebody pans it, you just say, well, you didn't get it. You know, that's the thing where if you're playing it a little bit straighter and you get bad reviews for it, there's no way to kind of, you know, duck, do a turnaround on it like, no, you just don't get it. If you're doing something more straightforward and people didn't like it, then chances are it's on you. So you're right. It's an interesting kind of angle to take as far as the people doing it. You mentioned Heidi Klum in Passing the Course. Who could ever forget her one Big Bird rendition that she did? You know, we talk about feathers and whatnot on some of these dresses.
Oh,
she had her usual one here. Is there anybody else that we haven't talked about yet vis-a-vis the red carpet that we should?
I think we covered the gamut of the ones that, you know, really, you know, were attention getting, you know, either way. You know, pretty much because my ones to mostly talk about, I mean, and they were all in a good way, were Cate Blanchett, Charlize Theron, Olivia Wilde, who I honestly heard no other show mention, and I find her to be one of the most beautiful women in Hollywood, period. And Lady Gaga, who I think is the only other thing I want to say about her, is I admire her business sense more than I admire, and I think she's very talented. But I think her business sense is worlds above her talent. And I think that she plans a lot of these things very, very detailed. I happen to be appearing on Good Day New York this week, coming up on Thursday, which is at the Fox station, the top-rated morning show here in the New York area. And one of the anchors there who I tweet with is Rosanna Scotto. And Rosanna Scotto had Lady Gaga on Good Day New York. She's been, I guess, a number of times, but I mean, when she was first coming to the scene a few years ago, and she said she never remembers anybody practicing more to get one number right in a small space and everything of the musical acts they've had on the show than Lady Gaga. She was just so focused and so nervous in, you know, with, you know, energy to make sure everything was perfect, perfect, perfect. She got there early. She was practicing, practicing, practicing. So she knew all the areas of the space she was going to be in. And that type of work ethic, you just don't teach. And I think she brings that to everything she does.
Absolutely. And again, she really is able to get the most out of her talent and her ability by doing that, no question about it. Now, as we've talked about, with people being polarizing in what they do, and of course Lady Gaga tends to fit that on a regular basis. You referenced earlier, as we start to move inside here at the Oscars to the things that happen inside the theater here, I want to start with what you had alluded to previously with the Stacey Dash kind of gag appearance that she did, and playing off the whole Black History thing here. And again, you know, maybe it's a win for her brand, I guess, to get the kind of reaction that she was getting. But that's not the kind of thing that on the surface you do, thinking that you're going to get any kind of redemptive reaction from the people who don't like you.
I looked up the word awkward in the dictionary, and I saw a picture of that appearance. It was just the most. The thing is this: I think that I have liked Stacey Dash in the past, and I also don't disagree with a lot of things she said in the past with different things. The Oscars thing, I just think that it's almost like I think that they hired her saying, let's get Stacey Dash on because she's a hot-button topic and she's somebody that they'll talk about. But then when they got her there, they had no idea what to do because I mean, they could have played that off in such a different way and made her come off as so much more positive. But the way she came out and did that little hee-hee, you know, hee-hee laugh, like that Michael Jackson hee-hee laugh at the end, it was just, you know, and then there's no reaction at all from the crowd. There's no clapping. There's no boos. There's no, because everyone was just in shock because they didn't know what the heck was going on. I think that's what, you know, was the worst about it personally. Because she could have used that time and that platform to do so much better and still be funny, but also be funny and likable.
Well, that's what happens when the Oscars programmers, we go back to that term before, when they decide to do performance art. That's almost what it was, by trotting her out there, just letting it be what it was and not really trying to do anything more with it.
And then she did it again, because the thing is, then she was on some show. I forgot what show, but she did this takeoff. I just saw when I was on the elliptical machine at the gym earlier, she did some sort of takeoff of Jimmy Kimmel's. It's Jimmy Kimmel who does celebrities read mean tweets, right? Or is it Jimmy Fallon?
Right. Jimmy Kimmel, I think.
Jimmy Kimmel, right. So she did a takeoff of that where she's reading mean tweets, but she's reading them so badly that nobody's like laughing and nobody's feeling bad. You just don't know what to feel. It's just the most awkward moment ever, because she's reading them and then she'll look into the camera, but it's not like you read something nasty and then you look into the camera like, yeah, and then everybody laughs with you. It was just, you know, it was the second definition of awkward. And then she also read them all in a row. There were like four or five mean tweets and she just read them like in a row without any feeling, and I think commented on one of them after the fact, but I'm like, ooh, that could have been done a little better for an actress.
Yeah, and again, I'm somebody that's probably more sympathetic to her worldview than just about anybody that would have been in the theater that night, but yeah, I mean, you have to say it for what it is, and yeah, it's just not anything that seemed to go particularly well along these lines.
Okay. If she had Lady Gaga's work ethic, she could have done much better on both those things. That's what I'm just saying. Just a little bit of planning, a little bit of rehearsal, and an idea of saying, what do I want to accomplish with this, and how can I get there? Because I don't. When she first came on, I mean, I think I tweeted something to the fact of, you know, whatever Stacey Dash's phone, you know, no matter what the Twitterati will say and what haters will say, Stacey Dash's phone is going to be ringing tomorrow. I can't predict that they're going to be good or bad calls, but the phone will be ringing. So, which is because I was at a total loss. I'm like, it wasn't like absolutely terrible where you say, well, I just hate this woman. And it wasn't anything good where she redeemed herself. It was just bizarre and not needed.
Absolutely, and in terms of you comparing it to where the Lady Gaga prepares for this, like a lot of the famous maxims in life, the one that says that 90% of life is just showing up is a lie. You got to be prepared for when you get there, quite frankly. So, yeah, you can't just show up and figure that it's all going to work itself out, particularly when we're talking about sticky subjects like race and the way that was kind of surrounding this year's awards anyway. So that was a big story going in, was, of course, the whining about the awards and how is Chris Rock going to handle this.
He was great. One thing about Stacey Dash, even taking away the race card, not even going into the race card, it's just about having poor judgment, just poor judgment with some of the things that she says. I mean, she came out and was trying to make a point of saying, we should all love everybody. There shouldn't be black. There shouldn't be white at one time. And I think she was trying to say, you know, this was before the Oscars, you know, there shouldn't be any type of segregation. It should just be all one thing. And then she goes, there should be no BET. Now, I don't care what your views are. If somebody's giving you a check and you were on a series that was on BET, you don't say something like that. Okay. They tweeted after the fact, oh, maybe you should return our checks. Because she was paid by BET. I mean, that's what I'm just saying about poor judgment across the board. Just even take the race card completely out of it. You don't bite the hand that feeds you. You don't smack somebody who's done a good gesture for you. That's what I'm saying.
Well, exactly.
Completed thoughts.
That's a great point. And that's why I made a point of identifying and saying, sympathetic to her worldview as opposed to being a defender of her specifically. I'm somebody that's very outspoken about not liking the balkanization of America, but again, she's not always trying to make these points in a artful, nuanced kind of a way. She's making these points in an attention-getting kind of a way,
as is her want. And again, that's where things get a little bit messier as we're trying to dissect this. And again, with the way that it went with Chris Rock, we knew that the monologue was obviously going to address the elephant in the room here, what was going to be the case with the nominations and the take that a lot of people, Will Smith included, that situation was not right. We didn't know what the specifics were going to be, so we came away the next day talking about this. I think on balance, everybody seemed to think that the monologue was great. There was an interesting part in there, too, about where he was hitting up the celebrities for his daughter's Girl Scout cookies.
Loved it.
There was the note that seems to have fallen flat in retrospect about Asians, where he made a joke about Asian kids. So as you would expect with Chris Rock, it was kind of, you know, whenever he does a monologue, a lot of times, isn't it really kind of the good, the bad, and the ugly? I mean, the good tends to outweigh the bad and the ugly, but you tend to get a little bit of everything with Chris Rock, and to me, this seemed characteristic of that.
I'd agree with you. I'd agree with you definitely on that. First of all, I mean, I saw conflicting reports. First, everybody said, oh, it's a great monologue. Then all of a sudden, all the haters came out, and then there were people saying it was absolutely awful and stuff like that. I thought he was great. I thought, you know, his jokes were spot on with, I mean, and I thought they were benign in some way, like the White People's Choice Awards, which was one of the takeaway lines. I mean, I thought that was a clever play on words, and it was cute, and it also, you know, it's an obviously serious topic. You know, the lack of diversity shown in the nominees there, and he had to address it, and I thought he addressed it very well. I think there's always going to be haters, and of course, even when he said the White People's Choice Awards, everyone came out hating him, saying, "Well, you didn't mention the Asians, you didn't mention these or every other race that was not included." So you're never going to please everyone, but I thought he was exceedingly comfortable for and he handled it very deftly for something that was a hot button issue, and I don't think he could have done any better personally.
Yeah, I thought everything was very good, and again, I was not even outraged certainly by the Asian joke there. It's my opinion a lot of times that, you know, we're far too uptight about these kinds of things, so I didn't really have an issue with that at all. But in terms of how he went about it, in terms of the backlash that came, I at least understand the backlash from Jeremy Lin and some of the other folks about that, because at least they were making a point. But what you were saying about that the universal praise was kind of rolling in, and then there seemed to be almost kind of a response against that. There's one of the things that I don't like with social media these days, of where we sort of get to, I don't know if the phrase exactly applies in this circumstance, but the backlash against the backlash. I guess this would be the inverse of that, because it was a backlash against positivity. But don't we seem to get people who just, a lot of times it's people who don't like a negative consensus on something who then decide to stick up for something indefensible. This was perhaps the photo negative of that situation, of where there just seem to be people out there who are like, I don't like that everybody is kissing Chris Rock's ass for having a great monologue, and then just went looking for whatever they could find about it. That's the kind of thing that really kind of bothers me, because in my mind, people should have original opinions and not just trying to be conforming to either going with the grain or being so determined to go against the grain.
No, I 100% agree. And also, I mean, on a small level, you have to remember that nobody goes on Twitter, Rick, to be anonymous. So everybody wants to be seen. So if they see people all praising something, they're going to write a negative thing just to say, maybe someone will write back to me that I'm wrong. Maybe someone will retweet me or something that I'm wrong. Or maybe there's a few people that will agree with me and favorite it because nobody else is saying what I'm saying. So I'm going to always go against the grain to try to get noticed. There is part of that on a more selfish level. But you're 100% right, because most people on the internet, and it's just truth, it's not a judgment or anything like that, but there's a lot more negativity on the internet than positivity. And the thing is, so if something is getting praised to a certain degree, there's always going to be those that are going to pick it apart. And if you're going to look for fault in something, no matter how perfect it is, you will always find fault, period. If you're looking for it, you'll find it, whether it's actual or not. In your mind, it'll be fault, and the internet gives you a voice to say whatever you want. And then it's up to other people to support that voice, that it gets to a level where other people see it.
That is a very great point. I agree 100%. To me, the second biggest story going into the Oscars, and a distant number two behind how is Chris Rock going to handle
the situation here and the controversy was, is Leo going to get the first Academy Award of his career? And he ends up getting it deservedly so for Best Actor and sort of completing that. And among the great serious actors of this generation, he stops being the Susan Lucci of them in terms of bringing one home, but managing to make it happen here. What were your thoughts on that? Because, again, to me, that's one of the other things that we're going to remember this year about is him getting off the schneid, getting that one, and you got to think that he's probably got maybe one or two more in him, depending on how long he goes.
Oh, agreed. A lot of the stuff, I didn't actually see The Revenant, but a lot of the stuff I read about it, once again, you know, I applaud work ethic. The stuff that he did, I mean, I think he went into a movie like that with the knowledge, he's a bright guy, that this, you know, could be an Oscar contender, this could be an Oscar-winning role. And he left no stone unturned to the point of, like, even actually eating, a bison liver or something right there. And when you see him on camera of him looking, like, you know, green and going to vomit, that was actually real. That wasn't even acting to some degree. But he went that far into it. And I think when you put in that type of method and become the character to that level, and you also make sure it's publicized that everybody knows you did that, or your team make sure it's publicized that everybody knows you did that, I think people are going to recognize it, because that's going above and beyond, going and sleeping in a horse carcass and stuff like that, so that you make it as real as possible. That's going to be rewarded. It's like what were we talking about with Matthew McConaughey and a lot of the others winners in the past, of when you go through dramatic and also painstaking physical changes, like gaining a lot of weight, losing a lot of weight, becoming the character, when you sacrifice to that level personally for your craft, that is going to be recognized by your peers.
Absolutely it is, and deservedly so. Recognized in this instance with the highest award that an actor can get, the Academy Award for Best Actor. And again, to me, that was, as I was looking at it, those were, I think, a good sweep of the major stories of the night, from the red carpet to everything that happened inside. Have we missed anything yet, in your estimation? Were there any other big stories that you came out of this night thinking about?
No, you are. You must have graduated from carpentry school, because nailed it.
All right. Well, and again, truth be told, yeah, I mean, I had to play catch up on a lot of this stuff. I think you were watching a lot more of this live than I was that night, but that makes me feel good. It shows me that the prep worked and that I was able to catch up successfully on this. So, again, I have enjoyed following.
Not to interrupt, the only thing I was surprised at was when I found out after the fact. I mean, I didn't like this that much. You know, because it's good to do for a bit and stuff like that. But I don't know, maybe the news reporter or journalist part of me, even though the Oscars is, you know, beyond that. When I found out that 65,000 that, Chris Rock joked, and they actually had the, reveal of that, when I found out that was all bogus, and that they only raised $2,500, and one report that I had read that it wasn't even going to his daughter's troop, it was going to a troop in California. That part bothered me a little bit after the fact, because I was really invested in that. I thought that was hysterical when he, you know, had the girls selling, and he says, last year we raised $600 and we came in second. We really want to win this year. And then he shows the 65,000, and I'm like, wow, that's awesome. That's so cool. And then I read the next day, oh, that was just a bit, and they really only raised 2,500, though people may have some more orders pending, but how many more? And that, you know, it wasn't actually going to his Girl Scout troop, his girls' troop in New York. It was going to some troop in California.
Okay. Well, these are the things, yeah, that you find out
that was
subsequently.
Little one thing that bothered me.
Well, and it's always interesting, of course, tracking what your thoughts are on these things at John Baystow on Twitter or on Facebook or johnbaystow.net. As far as being a hub for all of your activities there, I have to tell you this, as far as it goes with, I think, predominantly Facebook, but I think you've also done a little bit of this with Twitter, if I remember correctly, with the 7-Eleven Chronicles. I will tell you, flashing back to a Christmas Eve family dinner down in Atlanta this past year with my nephew, I was pulling up on my phone. I was looking for ways to make him laugh. I was reading him your old 7-Eleven Chronicles, and he was dying. So you made me look funny to my nephew, so I appreciate that.
I gotta bring them back. I love them because the most bizarre people go into the 7-Elevens, and I love them because they are my people, which is great. The thing is, people were writing on the 7-Eleven Chronicles like, oh, this should be a book. This should be a book. You should make a book out of this. And I'd always write back. I'm like, yeah, get me a deal. Get me a deal, and I'll put you in for 20%. Okay. they're a lot of fun, and if anybody wants to bring that to a bigger level, I am all for it because they are enjoyable to write.
You've already given away maybe some of the best stuff you're ever going to find on social media for free, because the ones that are out there are hilarious, and my nephew was just cracking up as I was reading them to him off my phone as we're sitting there in the restaurant. So that is a definite memory that I have. Anything going on in particular with your brands right now, John, in terms of any kind of changes or developments that people should know about?
Yeah, as bizarre as it is, it is bizarre. We have a whole new Fitness Made Simple website, which is it's so funny how I talk. I'm talking to you about, and I've talked to other shows about the Oscars and the other award shows. Then on Thursday, I'm talking on Good Day New York about Wake Up Words motivational series, and then I was on CBS in Baltimore talking about Fitness Made Simple. It's just I do a lot of different things that have no relation to each other. But the Fitness Made Simple site, which is really cool, has a new membership site, which I'm really, really proud of, because now you can become a member of the site and you have access to all the Fitness Made Simple DVDs, and you can work out with me and all this other stuff and not have to pay all that money to get all the videos individually. And you can still live stream them and do them wherever you want to, even from your phone. So that's sort of cool. And that's with a company called VHX had reached out to me to do that, and they did a beautiful job. And then some other things are in the works that I can't talk about, but there may be another live show coming up, which I'd be very excited about.
Oh, that's incredible. Well, we'll be looking for that, and I know that I'll be seeing any hints of that as they pop up on Facebook. And again, good luck with your appearance Thursday morning in New York. That is going to be a very exciting one as well. So always a pleasure catching up with you, my man, and I look forward to whatever the next event is that makes sense for you to come back on and break it down with us. Thank you so much, as always.
Well, man, as I say, Rick, I adore being on the show, and you are one of my favorite hosts of all time. So anytime you want me back, give me a shout.
Thank you very much, and right back at you, John. You're a great host, and you're a great guest, and great all the way around. I really appreciate having you on. Thank you for being here. Thank you, everybody, for tuning in to FDH Lounge mini episode number 701.
As we bring the show to a close, we would like to extend our deepest gratitude to NBC, CBS, ABC, Fox, all Clear Channel affiliates, TNT, TBS, USA, UPN, Deadspin.com, YouTube.com, YTMND.com, MySpace.com, various blogs, Fox News, CNN, CNBC, MSNBC, IamBored.com, Billboard.com, Google.com, ESPN, ESPN2, ESPN News, ESPN Classic, NBA TV, NFL Network, Sports Time Ohio, Athlon Magazine, Comedy Central, Cartoon Network, The Boomerang Channel, QVC, BET, The Spice Channel, Steno Notebooks, Manwich, Papermate Office Supplies, Waitresses, Strippers, Bartenders, Garbage Men, Janitors, Microwave Popcorn, The Writers of The Office, Scrubs, Entourage, My Name is Earl, Oz, Metalocalypse and the Boondocks, Awkwafina, and The Periodic Table of Elements.